goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Brian, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Connaughton, and my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Woolscroft.
Happy Mother's Day, motherfuckers.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Happy Mother's Day.
It doesn't have the same impact the second time around.
No, it doesn't.
See, your audience, we had a technical issue.
This recording session has been full of technical issues.
It's been a little rough.
We're already 45 minutes in when we started. We said we were going to record. So it's been fun. This is the glory of doing things remotely, isn't it?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's wonderful Mother's Day. Yep. No one's favorite holiday unless you are a mother, you know, because you got to like...
I like Mother's Day. It's because I'm such a brunch enthusiast.
You got to get up early and go to some crappy hotels.
But isn't every day now in coronavirus land brunch?
No. Right? Yeah. No, not at all. I can't go anywhere and have someone make me hollandaise sauce. If I want hollandaise, I have to make it my goddamn self.
Well, what I mean by that is like... There are people who, you know, don't have to get up, you know, one, it's a Sunday, so you don't have to get up for work or anything like that, you know, obviously because we're still under quarantine, but, you know, you're getting up at what, like 10, 11 maybe, so by the time you get your shit together, you've got your coffee, you know, it's around 11 o'clock, so then now you can make brunch. So that's what I mean when I say like every day in quarantine land is brunch.
I suppose, but I actually miss getting up and having to be somewhere and actually putting on, like, I don't know, real clothes.
You mean you're tired of wearing sweatpants and t-shirt?
Because Lane's completely naked right now.
Okay.
You are so rude. I am
so
not.
So it's post-coitus recording. Is that what we're doing?
No. Oh, my God. So rude.
Oh, I'm not a morning porker.
I loathe where this is going. I hate everything and everyone on this podcast. Okay.
I'm not a morning porker.
I am.
Because it would be like, I'd be sleepy. It would be completely selfish lovemaking. I'm a giver.
You're a giver.
John is so honest this morning, and I love that we're talking about this on our Mother's Day episode.
That's right.
Wow.
For your mom to listen to, right?
Listen, if you want to talk about some Mother's Day shit and you want to talk about coitus, fun fact, his mom walked in on us once.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No. Oh God, yeah. No.
It was when we were still living at his mom's house before we had moved to Pittsburgh, and she definitely walked in. He was definitely on top of me.
Oh, my God.
It was so bad. The light, like, left her eyes. Like, I could see the light leave her eyes.
That's just little Johnny over there.
It was.
He's a man now.
Well, it was big Johnny, but what are you gonna do? But yeah, I just saw the light leave her eyes when she realized what was happening. And I'm pretty sure that we didn't have the blankets up. So like his mom got like the full view of like all of John's ass.
My blue eyes and my brown eye.
Oh, God. Yeah, so, that's a nightmare right there.
If you want to talk
Happy
about
Mother's Day, everybody.
Yeah, if you want to talk about some shit, let's talk about some shit.
Well, like, good morning. That's horrible. I can't even comprehend that because like I think everybody has had like, you know, a family member accidentally walk in on them, like, you know, rubbing one out, you know. Like,
oh, yeah. That never happened to me.
If you've never been caught like a parent, like jerking one, you just didn't jerk it enough.
Yeah.
I think maybe you have skills. I don't know.
Here's my little story on that. So I was about 13. And of course, we had HBO and Cinemax. And if you had Cinemax and you were 13 years old,
you knew
what 11 o'clock at night meant.
Okay. Next, tits in jail.
Yeah. So I remember one night, I think it was a Friday night because that's when they all played. And my mom walked in.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, God. So I quickly changed the channel. Like, I don't know about you, John, but like, or Lane, like you would just change the channel. Like, oh, yeah, it's nothing. I'm watching boxing.
Well, would you put something like, you know, appropriate on last so that you could just hit one button and be safe?
Yes.
That's what you got to do.
But that time I did not do that.
Oh.
It's dangerous because, like, what if you turn on the learning channel? Because back then, like, they had, like, a lot of, like, actual
learning.
Yeah. So, like, you're like, oh, I'm just jerking off to open heart surgery.
Well, my thing is I accidentally flipped the channel and it went to boxing.
For God's sake.
So, like, my mom's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just watching boxing.
So, like, your mom just thought you were, like, really into aggressive man-on-man.
Have you met Brian? Brian doesn't watch boxing.
I know. I don't. And what was funny about it was, like, she flipped the channel back and she's like, oh, you're watching porn. Do you think this is what women are? I'm like, oh, God, mom.
Oh, well, that's kind of, like, it's a good angle to take.
No, it's not. Because when you're 13
years... It's like American Pie shit, yeah.
No, but here's the thing. When you're 13 years old, you're not thinking that.
Yeah, well, you should be, Brian.
Yeah,
you should know that that's not what women are.
Well, I know. I am well aware of that, okay? But at 13 years old, you've got hormones going crazy.
Listen.
Crazy.
But you need to know.
Well, I did know, but it was just very embarrassing because I'm like, oh, God.
That's good.
I'm going to get the talk now.
That's good. Well, you know,
nobody
John,
really thinks it's like, oh, no, my husband's working late again.
Yeah.
Here comes my stepson.
Maybe I can pleasure you on your anniversary.
Oh, just don't tell your father. Like, I don't really think that actually happens in the real
world. That's right. You know, I didn't think that every pizza delivery man was suddenly just bringing his sausage everywhere.
Who's
going to pay for this extra large sausage?
You know what's weird, though, John? You used to be a morning porker, though, because the one time I remember, it wasn't the time your mom walked in on us, but I remember, like, it was morning, and I remember, like, I feel like I was, like, just, like, in a very selfish place because we were, you know, in the morning. And I remember I was like, John's mom's making breakfast. I was like, oh, shit. I was like, she's making French toast and bacon. And I remember you and I were going at it. And I was like, that's right, bitch. Make me brunch. And then when we were done, I went downstairs and I got to have brunch.
So speaking
cereal
of
mom,
speaking of brunch making, let's talk about this. What was it? 1994? 1994, John Waters classic.
It seems older to me.
Oh, it seems really old.
Yeah, it recently just had its 26th anniversary. You
I can't believe
six,
that.
26th, the one nobody cares about.
I can't believe that.
It was April 13th, 1994.
I can't believe that. It's and I'll crazy. Tell you what, I think John Waters would fully approve of this conversation that we've had so far.
I expect nothing less from John Waters.
I think that he would be on our side.
I think he would be like, please, talk about your mom walking in on you,
tell me more about the morning porking.
And the morning porking. It's delicious.
See, I had a bathroom attached to my bedroom, and, like, my mom just, like, opened the door. I don't understand why she didn't knock. And I was, like, on the bed, but I was, yeah, like, completely above the covers. I fucking Matrix, like, did a flip into the bathroom right as the door was opening and, like, closed the door. And I was like, I'm having diarrhea, go away! She was, like, worried about me for the rest of the day.
Are you okay? Like, yeah, I'm fine.
Matrix into the bathroom.
I mean, it was the 90s. That's what you did.
Instead of bullet
everybody Matrix somewhere.
Neo does.
Instead of bullet time, John had bait in time.
little beads of jizz going everywhere. Just, whoa.
Some pre-powder, you know.
Oh, God.
All of his fluid turned into zeros and ones.
God, you know. Okay, so, but yeah, Cereal Mom. This was actually fun to watch again because I haven't watched this movie in probably roughly about 10 years.
Boy, it had been a lot. Yeah, probably the same thing for me. Lane had never
seen it. I was
really?
So excited.
Really?
I was so excited. Oh, guys, this is awesome to me. I'd always wanted to see this and just had never gotten around to it.
And I don't know about you, but John, when you first saw this, did you watch this as a kid?
Yeah, I saw it in 94.
Okay, so me too.
Yeah. Man, that blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, what was funny was like Lauren and I were watching this, you know, for the show, and, you know, I said to her, I was like, we probably shouldn't have seen this at the time that we were, like the age we were.
Yeah.
Is there some things in here that are pretty
it's a motherfucking
bad?
John Waters movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't know any better, but I remember being on like HBO. And that's where I typically watched all my films was on HBO because I was, hey, you know, why not? We're watching just going like, this is probably inappropriate for a kid like, you know, that's maybe almost 10. Because my stepson was like, oh, what are you watching? We're like, oh, we're watching this movie. He's like, can I watch it? I'm like, no. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the the crank calling scene, or the fact that one of the kids, Justin Whalen, is jerking it to big titty movies. I mean, you know, like that.
Oh yeah,
that's, see, that's not appropriate.
That's the thing with like my parents. Like, violence was never an issue. Language was a little bit, but like sex stuff, like, you know, they're probably maybe we shouldn't have him be watching this movie. Like when the kids like cranking one out, I wonder how well that
went.
We rented this from Papa Rob's.
By the way, gotta say, most unrealistic masturbation scene ever.
Well, did you want it to be realistic?
No, yeah, because I was thinking that too.
No, but it's just like nobody did that.
At the same time, it does seem like he's punishing his dick, and like that doesn't work for me either.
He's interrogating it.
He seriously.
Where are the drugs going?
Where are the drugs?
I will say, I have teased my parents on occasion on the show before, because I was the exact opposite of you guys. You know, I was 16 and my parents were still like, you can't watch that.
That's PG-13.
Yeah. And okay. Thanks, John. But
yeah, it wasn't that bad.
I think the level of comedy here, and I think the kind of, you know, the joke here, I think, you know, I'm still kind of an earnest person, and I'm still very much a what you see is what you get kind of person. And I have a hard time, especially with living with someone like John. You'd think I would have learned, but I tend to take people very literally.
Right.
And that's something that's, you know, I very much learned about my personality, you know, through years of therapy. No, I'm just kidding. I already knew that. But I tend to take people literally, and I am kind of an earnest person. I mm-hmm. think I was very much more so that way at 9 or 10, you know, when this movie came out. I guess I would have just been 9. But I think that this movie would have gone over my head, and I don't think I would have appreciated it as a kid.
Right.
So, and I feel like you guys probably appreciated it more seeing it as adults, right?
I mean, honestly, like for me watching this again, the things I picked up on more were just the kind of media circus mockumentary of that this movie is, because, you know, the time this came out, this was right in the thick of OJ.
Yeah, I think as they were finishing production,
yeah,
you know, the juice let loose, you know.
But then but even before that, like that was, I think, like it kind of just coincided with when this movie was released. But you also had at the time, like, I remember early 90s were all full of these celebrity murder trials, like the Menendez brothers.
Yeah, I think this is squeezed right between Menendez and OJ.
Yeah.
It's very salacious, very public crimes.
And while they were shooting this, I think it came out with the whole Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding
thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, so. Right. That was a big deal, too.
Yeah, yeah, so I that's the one thing I picked up more on with this, with just how it's basically a parody of those real life scenarios. Whereas at the time when I was a kid, I think I just saw it as like, this is funny. And the murderings are funny, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I imagine that like the outrageousness, like the outrageous stuff, like killing somebody with meat, I would have laughed at 9 years old. But I don't think like the biting, sardonic, like mocking of American culture probably went over my head when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Even right. though like literally he couldn't have spoon fed it down your throat any harder. He's yeah, not it a was, man of subtlety.
No.
Forgive yourself, John, you were 9.
I was gonna say no one I think looks at John Waters and says, ah, yes. He
King
is the
King
subtle film the subtle filmmaker. The man behind A Dirty Shame. Yeah, no, I don't think he is subtle at all. But I think that's a strength in this, is because it's that hit you in the face approach, but it's kind of at the backdrop of this very like lily white suburban, you know, setting,
well,
which
too,
is funny.
How funny is this too, now against the landscape of a very different era, but how some things are just completely the same. I know that we had the early 90s with all these sensationalized crimes with celebrity, but there was a novelty to it back mm-hmm. then. And I would say even the mid-2000s, there was a novelty with these young, I want to say starlets, but I can't bring myself to call Paris Hilton a starlet.
She's not a starlet because she'd have to be in something.
Or
she'd have to do something.
Or
other
have
than
talent.
Wasn't she in House of Wax?
Yeah, well, she was in a couple episodes of Veronica Mars,
the hottie
too,
and the naughty,
which makes me kill myself, or want to kill myself. Excuse me, But the I think that too, naughty. You know, with her, when she, you know, had to go to jail and when Lindsay Lohan was having her problems, there was a rash of those. But I feel like these sensations.
Brittany shaving her head. Yeah, that was around then.
Brittany didn't necessarily get in trouble with the law. She just was very mentally ill.
Yeah.
Well, didn't she like not feed her kids or whatever the fuck?
Well, they were taken from her because she was very mentally ill. But yeah. There was a whole thing with her conservatorship and her dad and hashtag free Britney. Anyway, with the internet and stuff now, I think that we're almost kind of numb to people behaving badly.
Yeah.
Because, too, this reminded me of the Casey Anthony story.
Yeah.
Where moms are total pieces of garbage, you know?
I think when the president says outrageous things on a daily basis, it kind of, you know, negates any other thing. Like, oh, what's that? Parent tried to kill her kid. Oh, okay. What's the president say today?
Oh, he said shoot a lightning bolt up your asshole to kill coronavirus.
There you go.
Well, yeah. I mean, too.
And then he said China did this to hurt his election campaign. Yeah.
Well, listen, as much as I am fine with shitting all over 45, but I think, too, the world is just very different now than it was then. I think once an entire school of babies has been shot, like there's no going back. I think it's interesting that this would have been very shocking and very heinous, you know, for the movie back then. But, you know, the world's just so different now.
Well, it's funny with the John Waters movie because, like, this is campy satire at its highest. Like, I feel like you need to buy into this because I don't even think John Waters believes in how outrageous he's suggesting things would be. Like, this is fantasy satire. Like, what he's hitting on is kind of true, but how far everybody goes is another degree. And that's just John Waters having fun with it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, the one guy who comes up and confronts Matthew Lillard and then says, like, hey, I think I can get Jason Priestley to play you in the movie. And he's like, for real? Like, you know, it's so far out there, but it's like it's a John Waters movie, so you're like, okay, he's assuming the absolute worst of every human being alive, and everyone is an empty shell, void of a human being.
I think it's almost that every character in this is. I mean, honestly, I think with the exception of Beverly, are all caricatures.
Yeah,
they're all caricatures of just characters that you would see in suburban life. You know, you've got, the son who's the kind of rebel. So he's obsessed with horror movies, which
in his first starring role.
Matt Lillard in his first role. I forgot how fond of Matt Lillard I am. I love him.
Yeah. This was like what? Right a year before Scream. Mm-hmm. So that's where he pretty much take off. So but what's interesting about it is just that, you know, I associated myself a lot with him because I at the time was and still am very obsessed with horror movies. But you know,
what's the matter with you, Sonny? You crazy? You need therapy? Why do you like them horror flicks? Yeah,
because
that kind of hit home too. Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, he rents those horror movies at the movie rental store.
Yeah, it's like so.
Yeah.
So what?
Meanwhile, most of the horror movies that I saw when I was a kid was like Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5. That's more funny than it is scary.
Well, yeah, but even that, like, yeah. I don't know. I associate myself a lot with him. But like every person in this movie, you know, from the asshole teacher to the father, even
who's a doofus,
but that's his caricature is of the doofus. You know, the guy who doesn't even how could you have a relationship with someone and you don't know any of this backstory on them? Like that kind of tells me of how strong their marriage is. If quite literally, he didn't know.
Well, what's the any statement of this? What's the statement being made there? They had a great marriage, but they didn't know each other at all. That's the statement that they're making, or that Waters is making here, which is obviously a very cynical, very 90s statement.
It very much is. But it, like, how do you not know that your wife is reading all these murder books and has these tapes with
Ted Bundy?
Ted Bundy, who I believe that actually is John Waters.
It is. On the tape. That's his cameo in it.
It's pretty great.
But it just, everyone here is a caricature. They're not real. Like, no one in this is really a real person. They're just kind of these warped versions of people.
it's interesting, and you guys are going to say, "What? Where the hell is he going with this?" But it'll be, I'll very quickly, I'll explain it. This movie reminds me of the '89 Batman, in just one way. They both have Batman in. No, I was kidding. is that like there's no real clear understanding of what time frame the '89 Batman movie is supposed to be? It's like modern day, but it's also the '50s, it's the '30s. Whatever. This movie takes place in, you know, 1994 or 1993 when they were shooting it, but it doesn't it feel like the '50s? Like it has that kind of Leave It to Beaver feel to it. So it's like it has the feel of a 1950s family, 1950s era, but it's modern day. They have video rental stores. They have, you know, they're talking about hard copy and shit like that. So it's like, but it feels like the '50s. I feel that's what he's kind of mocking, is that whole Donna Reed style kind of Leave It to Beaver
stuff. That family
stuff.
Unit
yeah.
kind of situation. That's interesting.
That's an interesting point. I never really thought of that way, but well, I think there's a mixture of those. But yeah,
I agree. Well, one of the things that I like about this movie too is that in making outrageous characters and making outrageous actions throughout the film, I do still think that Waters made likable characters.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't always see that in outrageous films. I've seen a lot of things recently where there has been outrageous movies and no one's been likable. You know,
well, even Serial Mom is likable.
Right. I was just going to say.
I love this person.
Even you know, she herself, I mean, she there is a lot of stuff that's likable because I believe that she loves her kids.
Is like the people she goes after all suck, right? Like the teacher who's like, your son likes horror movies, so he's got to be a delinquent. Or mm-hmm. or a Dottie. Oh,
Dottie Hinkle.
Dottie gets what she deserves.
Dottie. I think that it is cool that I was able to see this as an adult with the 90s completely in my rear view, though, and having that look back on suburbia, mm-hmm. because I think, too, it's so interesting to see like different generations of things because it's such a time capsule, right? Yeah. You know, because I hate to break it to you, John, but I don't feel like we're that much younger than than Serial Mom and her husband are, you know, there. You know, you're supposed to have the nuclear family at a certain age.
Well, speaking of which, Ricky Lake is like 35 goddamn years old.
Oh, yeah.
She's not. She's not that old in this. She might be like 21.
I actually looked up her. She was like 28 when she made this, but really? She looks much older.
Did she have her show at this time?
She couldn't have had it yet.
I don't know. It was around the mid-90s she had that trashy show. So
I'm looking it up.
All right. Okay.
I love Ricky Lake. I can't explain it. I love her so much.
But yeah, Kathleen Turner was fucking amazing in this. And she was like the ninth or tenth option. But every single actress who read for this movie said, hey, I'll do it, but you got to change the character around a little bit to make her more likable or more redeemable. Or I don't really want to say this because I don't want to say like cocksucker or motherfucker here. It's a little too much. And basically John Waters was like, well, this conversation is over. Like Susan Sarandon was one of them. You know, there were other people. And he basically, Julie Andrews, which would have been hilarious.
That would have been hilarious.
Yeah.
But, oh, wow. This debuted in the September of 93. So yeah, this would have been on before.
Okay.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah. To interrupt. Keep
but
going.
But yeah, and he just basically ignored everyone that wanted him to change his script. And a lot of people were charging way too fucking much. And it went to Kathleen Turner, and she said, sure. He's like, you don't want to change anything. She's like, no, it's your script. He's like, you don't mind us paying you bottom of the barrel considering you're a movie star. She went, no, that's fine. He went, all right, you're in.
That's you know, amazing.
She played by the entire rules. And one thing I found up on IMDb's movie trivia was that Matthew Lillard noticed that Kathleen Turner had memorized everybody's name on the call sheet, and this is like his first big movie production, and he asked why. She said, you know, I quote, oh honey, that's the first thing you do.
So
she was a consummate pro on the movie. She didn't try to change anything, and she got the character right away. And I saw John Waters in person, and they were at this place in Baltimore and at a restaurant. She's like, I heard that you have the finest martinis in the entire state. I was like, that's right, ma'am. She goes, prove it.
Awesome. Awesome. So do we want to dive a little bit into the plot of this film?
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, it is I will say I think that the story has a few problems. The structure, I think.
Well, yeah, because like the movie starts off with, you know, the idyllic nuclear family, and then the police show up and say, hey, you know, you're one of your neighbors, Dottie Hinkle, is getting obscene phone calls, you know, and you know, there's certain words in there. She's like, oh my gosh, I don't even think those words. And then like 10 minutes after the cops leave, she's calling Dottie Hinkle, like, fuck you, you got her slut gun, you know.
Yeah, after like the family leaves and everybody's doing their thing.
Yeah, this movie wastes little time just jumping right the fuck in.
But. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, I think Kathleen Turner is having fun with this character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I you know,
she is great in this.
There's
like,
something about
so
like,
good.
The darker, not darker voice, what is it? More husky voice,
yeah.
I guess. You know, and but she does have that like, and I mean, there's a lot of ways she's styled, but she does have that kind of like old fashioned, like, you know, mom look to her.
Yeah.
But she has that like darker voice. Yeah. And she does look like she's just having a great time just being as vulgar as humanly possible.
Yeah.
But it just leads to everybody that she runs across in her life that is pissing her off. She just murders with absentmindedness, no care whatsoever. Yeah. And people are seeing her. She's walking around covered in blood.
Yeah.
And people are seeing her car drive off. And
she completely acts like nothing. Like, one, like that she, it's almost like she has split personality disorder, where she keeps going back and forth between, like, the idyllic mom and the you know, vulgar murderer. Because she doesn't really isn't fazed by anything. She's like, I can't believe that they're talking about me like this, and the police are looking at me as a suspect. Because after this, she kills the teacher, who calls her son like a psychopath.
Yeah, some kind of pervert watching those movies.
Yeah. And what I find hilarious is like that conversation is, well, he's a good student, he's doing great, he's got like A's, but he's a crazy person.
Yeah, meanwhile,
which
like,
is so stupid.
His character is just like so naively sweet, too. Like, he wouldn't hurt a fly, you know, through the whole movie.
Yeah. And he seems like such a nice guy. And like, I think that this was atypical for the time, like in the 90s, that the family does have a nice cohesion.
Yeah.
Because I feel like especially in television, there was a very serious trope of how the kids knew everything and the parents were very clueless.
Mm-hmm.
But, and there was like that disconnect. In entertainment, I thought that there was a nice relationship between the kids and their parents, and to the kids got along. And I feel like you didn't see that a lot, especially in the 90s, where the, you know, the siblings just hated each other. And I always thought that that was so weird. I mean, as an only child, I was kind of always looking at that sort of like a anthropologist might, because I didn't really understand it. But I was like, do all siblings hate each other? Or like, how does that work?
Well, I mean, they went at each other a little bit, and that's what, you know, siblings do. Like, it's,
but you could tell that they did care about each other.
Barring, yeah.
Yeah, it's never just pure and utter hatred. You don't really like. You just like. Well, today he's kind of annoying. Like, that's it. Well, what's really? Oh, he's kind of annoying today.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've seen some memes that have explained sibling relationships pretty well. Now I think I get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty much. But after she has a conversation with the teacher, she literally like just runs his ass over.
It's amazing. And they don't even give a really good reason, honestly.
No, the reason is he called her son a crazy person.
But like, she mows him down with that station wagon, y'all. Like, she does not mess around.
And what Serial Mom does not know is that someone was watching.
Yeah, and here's what I don't fully understand. And maybe I'm thinking too hard about this movie. Like, was this the genesis of her turning her what's called them sociopathic tendencies to violence, or are we supposed to believe that she has killed other people in the past?
I mean, I almost think that. I mean, that's the thing is they're never really establishing whether she has consistently killed over time. And that's kind of the thing. The only thing they think they've established is just that she's always been kind of like a fangirl of murderers. And you know, maybe at that point, you know, got involved with murderers romantically. Cause there's a scene where her husband finds tapes and other types of materials from Richard Speck and Ted Bundy and just, you know, these famous you know, murderers that she's just, you know, almost infatuated with. But I don't think there's anything to say that she's actually killed anyone prior to that moment.
But if a dog went missing in the neighborhood, we know what happened to it, though, right?
Probably.
It was barking too much, and Kathleen Turner took it out.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's almost like because of the fact that someone went after her kid directly, that it pushed her from just being a admirer of these people and maybe just at the same time, you know, committing things like vulgar phone calls to Dottie Hinkle, who definitely deserved it. I'm sorry.
Poor Dottie.
Oh, fuck Dottie.
Fuck no. Dottie. She's horrible in this.
Oh, yeah. Just she's that one of your mom's friends you just couldn't fucking. I'm glad her stupid Faberge, or that she got blamed for the Faberge.
But by the way, Mink Stole does an amazing job playing Dottie.
Oh, she does.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I don't think that she killed anyone prior to the teacher. That's just me.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe I'm overthinking a movie by a self-proclaimed, like, you know, sex pervert who made a movie about a mom who just, like, kills people with cars and meat. Maybe I should just
cars
enjoy
and meat.
Just enjoy the show. But, you know, like, I heard this a lot because the kind of people that my parents associated with would say things like, you know, I took you into this world, I can take you out, or hey, like, you know.
My mom used to say that to me all the time.
Or they would say, like, hey, you know, like, you keep it up and I'll smack you silly and be like, nah, we'll call child services. And they'd be like, not if we don't leave any bruises.
Whoa.
You know, and just like shit like
that.
And on the flip side, you would hear like, oh, she, like, if she says that or does that to you again, like, she's going to see Mama Bear, you know, and like moms would always pretend like they're just like these caged animals if anybody comes after their kids. But this is literally the actual example of, oh, you want to call my son like a weird pervert? I will run you down the fucking car.
Yeah.
I do think my mom would like hurt somebody if they hurt me. I have no doubt.
I don't think, like, I forget that, and I don't think anyone says it now, you know, that if you, you know, I'll take you out, you know, I can take you out. It's like, that just seems kind of wrong to say nowadays.
Oh, my mom used to say it when I was growing up, but at the same time, my freshman year of college, my friends used to kid that if, like, the government really wanted to find bin Laden, they should just, like, have him kidnap me, and my mom would just have turned the Middle East into a crater.
Yeah, they would have gone all Liam Neeson. But anyway, I can definitely see where, you know, this is taking that whole, you know, mom will get you if you mess with their kid thing to like the nth degree.
Yeah. And
it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More murders take place.
In funnier ways.
Yeah.
Like in really funny ways.
He stands up Ricky Lake cause he got like a hotter chick and she sees this guy at the swap meet. So in the bathroom, she takes a fire poker to his like midsection and his liver gets stuck on it, you know.
To be fair,
and it's like here, that's John Waters for you.
To be fair, Carl does get Tracy Lord, so I mean, you know.
Yeah.
this is
who is a porn star? Like
who is a porn star?
Let's talk about John Waters' casting style. So he has a porn star in the movie, Sandra Day O'Connor. Supreme Court Justice has a cameo in the movie, and
she does.
Yes,
yeah, I didn't know that.
And, that's amazing.
And Patty Hearst, who robbed a fucking bank, is in this movie.
Yeah, Patty Hearst is in it.
But I think we've all agreed that's Stockholm Syndrome. Okay,
well,
that's what that is.
I saw this documentary. It didn't seem, seem like that's just what her rich lawyer said. That was going on.
Wow.
Yeah. But I just was like, well, it's Tracy Lords. I mean, come on.
Well, and this is one of those things where
Blame Carl.
Well, no, I was just going to say this scene where she has the liver on the end. Like there were several moments in this movie where I laughed and I was this is really messed up that I'm laughing at this, but I didn't care.
They always cut that part out, by the way, on when it was playing on like syndicated TV. Like,
well, gee, I can't imagine why
even play this movie on TBS.
But they used to play it on USA all the time.
Oh, this movie seems custom built for USA. Yeah. Yeah, USA is the trashy version of TBS.
It seriously is.
That's why WWE is on USA, but WCW was on TBS. It's like, how are we going to beat WCW? We're going to say dick sucking vagina because they can't.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but
wow.
I'm just getting flashbacks to watching
titty dick sucking vagina.
Yeah, but yeah, they definitely like that scene where she's got the liver. You have to laugh at it.
You know,
it's
and
so
I
comical.
I can see how this movie's very polarizing because the thing is, like, early John Waters, there was no question that, like, this is for an unspeakably particular audience. And that's, like, the only way these movies could have been made is independently and then trying to be distributed independently, like Pink Flamingos, mm-hmm. you know, or something along those lines. Like, because you, there's a very small audience, me included, that likes that shit.
Right.
But Serial Mom is, I was one of the first times that he. And this is so weird to say that a movie where a mom is stabbing people with fire pokers and getting their liver stuck to it, that this is his most commercially approachable movie.
Oh, I would say.
Oh,
absolutely.
I agree 100%, which is
maybe Hairspray. I don't know. But
yeah, Hairspray is its own niche, though, because it's a musical, though.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so I feel that some people maybe went into this like thinking like, hee hee hee, it's a serial killing mom. This might just be like good for a hoot or holler. And they go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a guy like trying to make a glory hole and then they're stabbing people to death. And
yeah. If you think this is a fun romp, you are mistaken. Yeah.
No, this I mean, that's the thing is and I think that might have been the reason why this was not successful financially.
Yeah, we could have almost done this as a really that awful. Here, spoiler alert, it's not. But the thing is, like, it was a lot of the critics were shitting on it, and it only made $7.8 million on a $13 million budget. So, yeah, people did avoid this movie.
Yeah, this
and
I wonder, which is a shame. Yeah. This
was considered a bomb. Like, it didn't even break even. You know, but I think that part of that is because John Waters is not a commercial filmmaker.
No,
he's just not. And that's fine. He doesn't have to be. He got into this business by, as you said, John, being very independent and really just kind of telling stories that, you know, were vulgar and had horrible people in it. And, you know, you can't really take that and then mesh it with commercialism. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and because he almost went out of his way to try to ostracize 90% of his audience, you know, and
yeah.
God bless him for it, but, you know, and because like Pink Flamingos and Desperate Living, you know, Polyester, like, you know, Hairspray, you know, just I'm going through his filmography here real quick. Like, yeah, that was his first approachable one. Crybaby somewhat, but nobody fucking saw it.
I love Crybaby.
I do too. Yeah. you know, I guess you could say maybe Cecil B. Demented or this.
That's a good movie too.
Yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I forgot he did that one too.
But it wasn't until you're right, Lane, that they made Hairspray into a musical and then made the movie version of the musical.
Right.
That like all of a sudden people are like, oh, I love that John Waters. Really? What else have you seen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah. What else have you
seen? You haven't seen Pink fucking Flamingos, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think a lot of people like him more than even his movies.
Which is good absolutely. Because he's wise and awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We should do a film retrospective on a filmmaker retrospective on John Waters. Although I'll have to space out Mondo Trasho and Pink Flamingos on separate days
wow.
so I don't lose my lunch.
Wowie, wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. But just to get back to the film, you know, after Carl gets it, you know, that's when I think it starts to kind of dawn on everyone that, you know, Beverly really is killing these people.
It finally occurs to them.
It finally occurs to everyone. So what I find hilarious are just the way that everyone reacts to her after this point. Because the police are literally like, there's a scene where they're going to church and there's a giant parade of cop cars following her around.
And she's like, gosh, golly gee, what's happening?
I don't know what's going on. And they stop at a stoplight and a car comes up next to them and they roll down the windows and they're just like, hello, and they scream. I was just saying, like, the reactions to Serial Mom, you know, it runs the gamut from just insanity to pure mocking of the reactions that we have to, you know, killers in our own reality.
Well, this reminded me, 2 weeks ago, we did Mars Attacks. Mm-hmm. And in one way, this reminds me of like basically people are trying to like live their lives, and these little fucking Martians just run in and fucking just kill everybody without hesitation. That's what, basically the third act of this movie is just Serial Mom just going place to place, oh, just yeah. murdering
she
everyone.
She just kills everyone. She
and they but, can't stop her.
But like, it's almost like Looney Tunes level at that point.
Yeah.
Because what?
Yeah.
She kills the one woman who doesn't rewind her her VHS tapes, which, by the way, kids, that's what we had to do back in the day. You had to rewind your tape. You didn't have to do that with DVD or Blu-ray or anything else like that, or even
Be
Netflix.
Be kind, rewind.
And if you didn't rewind it, they would charge you. So,
but well, anyway. I want to tell one on me here real quick.
Oh, you didn't rewind one?
No. I think Elaine's going to be very, very smug about this. So I used to mock her because at her house they had tape rewinders.
Oh.
And then I was like, wow, you guys are dorks. And then I was like, just one day, randomly, I was like, man, don't you hate it when you would rewind your tape in the VCR and sometimes like when it would snap at the end, rewinding the whole way, like it would like mess up the tape. And Lane's like, yeah, hey, asshole, that's why we had tape rewinders, because they didn't do that. And I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be such a fucking prick all the time.
Well, too, we had rewinders also yeah. because rewinding the tape entirely in the VCR was bad for the motor. And that would make the VCR die faster.
And that's actually really smart. I was the Boom. Asshole who didn't have that. So I think, Lane, you're the only person I've ever met who's had a tape rewinder.
And that's why I was such an asshole to her.
Dude, I mean, I'm reeling from that new experience. Yeah. But yeah, no, not only were we such enthusiasts, my parents, when they sent me to college, sent me with a VCR and a rewinder.
That's funny.
Because
don't use the rewind. Don't use the rewinder in the VHS tape.
You know what the weird thing is? Like, awesome. you're turning 35 this year, yeah, but it sounds like my parents sent me to college with a VCR. You sound like you're 57 years old.
You are also turning 35 this year, sir.
I am
you
not.
You make it seem like I am not.
I'm turning 25.
That I'm alone.
I had the dual VHS and DVD. Rocking that, okay. The combo drive. Combo drive. I was forward thinking.
Well, and also, my dad sent me with DVDs because I had my computer and I could watch movies on my computer.
There you go.
Remember when computers had disk drives? I fucking miss that shit.
Mine still does.
My first so, DVD player was the PlayStation 2 I had.
Yeah, my Macs don't, and it's fucking terrible.
My first DVD player was an Apex. That company doesn't even exist anymore.
Wow.
I was like, oh, man, it's like I got an Apex 5000. This is awesome. It was a shit DVD player that was a bargain bin at Best Buy. But I bought it with my own money. So there you go. Yay.
Woo-woo.
But getting back to the film, the kills in this become really comical. Because you just start off with kind of things based in reality, like getting run over by a car, maybe even hit by a, you know, stabbed by a poker at a antique swap meet. But then you get things like the one woman getting hit by a turkey leg.
It was like a roast beef shank.
Yeah. To
which might be by one the of way, my favorite
eating the grossest ever. Sandwich I've ever seen. Like if we kind of looked at this when we were watching for the show, and like if you look at it, there's like some green goo that's in the sandwich. So we don't know what the hell she's eating.
Lane, you know what you said.
Oh, I think it was aspic.
Aspic, yeah.
I don't know what aspic is.
Ooh, oh, let me drop some knowledge on you.
Yeah, I would say, Brian, just Google 1950s cookbook.
Oh, okay. So the gross shit that people used to eat back then.
Yeah.
Okay, just think about when it was the war and you had to just like throw shit together because rations, okay? All right, aspic. Yeah. Hold on. Aspic is a dish in which ingredients are set into a gelatin made from meat stock or consommé. Aspic can also be referred to as aspic gelée or aspic jelly. Non-savory sweet dishes often made with commercial gelatin mixes without stock or consommé are usually called jello salads in the United States. Now, knowing what I know now about the film, I did originally think that that was aspic, but now thinking about it and realizing that it was a lamb shank that she beat her to death with, I think the green stuff was mint jelly, guys.
It's still pretty gross.
Lamb with mint jelly, that's pretty traditional.
That's still pretty fucking gross.
Well, if you guys horseradish had brunch, you would know this shit.
Whatever happened to just like mustard or mayonnaise? Like we
on lamb?
What
is wrong with you?
I said horseradish. Come on.
Horseradish is good too.
But I did originally think it was aspic, but now knowing that it was lamb, I didn't realize that when I had said that.
Yeah, either way, it's a gross sandwich.
So she deserves to die.
She did. She did.
And like when you go to a video rental store and instead of like, you know, Advancing Your Horizons, you rent Annie again, like, fuck you, bitch.
I like, heard they had to spend like a ridiculous amount of
$60,000.
Yeah, because they knew who John Waters was.
$60,000 to get the rights to that. And the reason why they charged so much money is because of the blood on the screen, like because it was such horrific imagery. They charged out the ass because it was so like, you know, like,
yeah,
well, horrible.
But it was such a glorious thing, and honestly, worth maybe not worth $60,000. Considering it didn't make any money.
I think it was worth every dime.
My favorite sidebar on that is Clockwork Orange. So when they're filming the scene very early on in the movie where you know, Alex and his drogues are just beating a man half to death and then raping his wife in front of him.
Yeah.
Malcolm McDowell just like starts singing like, singing.
Yeah, the yeah. Rain.
And they're like, oh shit, well, I mean, that's copywritten. Like, we gotta like try to get permission for it. So Stanley Kubrick calls the original songwriter. And he's like, hey, I want to put your song in my next movie. And then he's like, Stanley Kubrick, I love you. You're a genius. Yeah, whatever you want. He's like, good, don't ask me what it's for. And just hangs up. And then the guy goes to see the movie and like basically faints because he's like, that's why you wanted my song for a rape and murder scene? You asshole.
I'm awful.
I'm surprised that didn't become like a lawsuit. I'm really surprised it didn't become a lawsuit.
So bad.
Anyway, getting back to some of these murderings.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get off track.
Yeah. No, but that's fine. It's fine. It's fine. You know, the woman gets hit with the lamb shank, and then what ends up happening is she goes after the pervert kid. He really is like, no one is that big of a pervert. Like the guy, Justin Whalen, he's literally like looking at dirty 1950s pornographic magazines in his car all the time. He's jerking off to old porn.
Look, I think at that age, you just got extra juice in there.
I guess so, but it's kind of ridiculous. And I think that might be kind of why you're thinking like, maybe this the time period is so like mixed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But she goes after him in the most ridiculous way, chases after him, and he ends up at a punk rock bar. And of course, L7, also known as Camel Lips in the movie, which, funny fact, I have this song in one of my playlists on Spotify.
Nice.
Because I actually do like L7. I like the music. And oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Sorry, everybody. We're not in the same room, so this is a little tough on us. So
that's why it's happening.
Yeah, kind of talking over each other. But I had obviously seen this a few times, and when I was watching it with Lane, as we mentioned at the top of the show, this is our first watching. And when it says Camel Lips, and then we get a close up of Camel Toe, Lane's like, "Well, that's John Waters for you."
Well, yeah,
I was like, "You can tell he made this."
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you get one of the greatest deaths in this because it's so over the top. Like, I think this might be the most over the top one in the whole film, where, you know, the rock concert's going on, L7's rocking out. You know, Justin Whalen sees Serial Mom, and Serial Mom tries to kill him she kills him with first the lighting rigs falls on his head. Okay, so that's number one. That would kill you right on the spot.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get back from that. Then she uses an aerosol can and lights fire on him. and if that isn't bad enough, L7, seeing this all happen, decide, hey, let's just add more fuel to the fire, quite literally, by blowing alcohol on him, causing him to burst in flames even more. And everyone's cheering Serial Mama. She gets pulled away by the cops. It's like the most over the top kill. And I laugh every single time. I'm a terrible person.
No, I know. I was right there with you, laughing my ass off. And it's funny that this movie leads to such an outrageous, over the top courtroom finale.
Because, God! And the thing is, so over the top.
Because you would think like, oh, there's no way that, you know, this would ever. What's that? O.J. Simpson? Oh, okay. Like literally, almost immediately he's vindicated in this outrageous sideshow courtroom scene by what happened with the OJ trial. And I remember that summer, my family, we went to North Carolina for the beach, and honestly, we spent most of the goddamn time inside watching the OJ trial instead of going to the ocean. Yeah. The weird thing is, as outrageous as this scene is, I feel like OJ was even more outrageous, but and she ends up being her own lawyer and plays everybody like a fiddle.
That's the brilliant thing is that she dismantles every credible witness with, a masterful stroke. Literally, every credible witness. She gets the police officer who's like, oh, yeah, we found all these murder books in her trash. And suddenly it's like, yeah, well, we looked into your trash and you've got, chicks with dicks porn.
By the way,
that wouldn't really mean much nowadays.
But yeah, the thing is, here's how much of a weirdo my mother is and why I'm so fucked up. I remember when we were watching this, I'm 9, and she pulls out Chicks with Dicks. We had to pause the movie because my mom was laughing so hard she couldn't concentrate. I think just the beauty of the rhyme of Chicks with Dicks, my mom was paralyzed with laughter for 15 minutes. And I think this is my relationship with her. I can go up to my mom and be like, hey, mom, Chicks with Dicks, and she'll just laugh.
Because John was like, there's a joke in here that paralyzed my mom for and John was exaggerating. He's like, for 45 minutes. Yeah. And we were watching the courtroom scene, and Chicks with Dicks came out, and I was like, that was it, wasn't it? And he was like, yep. But this is where I feel like the storytelling kind of falls apart, because after all the hijinks and all the chase and everything, the trial feels a little bit laborious here to me. It feels like the movie's getting a little long.
And honestly, I can sympathize with that, because everything kind of moves at a pretty quick pace in this movie, mm-hmm. except for the trial.
And the trial.
I don't
okay.
know, guys. I think I might have to just be the dissenting voice here. I thought the trial moved at a brisk pace, and I thought everything was hilarious. I had no problem.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious. Right. I just think the pacing was off.
Right. I mean, get rid of the camel lips. Scene. If
you're
oh, no.
No. No. No. No. No. No. Wrong.
Fake news.
Fake news.
I can't stand either.
Camel lips must be in the movie.
Just so you know.
We need the little pervert to be on fire. We can't lose that.
Oh, my God.
That is the climax of the movie, okay? I need that in there.
That was his climax. He didn't know if he was coming or going.
Wow.
Yeah, but I just every time that she takes down one of these people in the courtroom, it's hilarious. She gets Dottie Hinkle to basically get thrown in jail. But she gets the pervert who's writing the jury sniffs my underpants, which I'm like, why is he writing that on there? Gets him to, basically recant his testimony by, basically making her legs go open and shut because he's a pervert.
And he basically puts himself in jail.
Yes,
because he could see pussy for a second.
Yeah,
that's some next level pervert.
That is
some next level pussy.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, at the end of it, you get Suzanne Somers.
I know, she's a nice cameo at the end.
Yeah, really I love funny. That she was basically willing to shit on herself.
Yeah.
By becoming and playing this vapid asshole.
Dude, I herself. Love when celebrities shit on themselves. It's my very favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. She's
gonna play Serial Mom in the made for TV movie.
Right. So she's
clear.
At the trial and stuff. Yeah. And then at the very end is one of those non-ending endings that I'm not a big fan of.
Oh, really? Because I thought it was a great punchline.
I thought it was great.
Other than Chicks with Dicks, when my mom thinks of this movie, she thinks about the fact that she killed a person for wearing white shoes after Labor Day.
You can't wear white shoes after Labor Day.
And
it's
once again,
the rule.
That is Patty Hearst,
right.
Bank robber extraordinaire. I thought it was hilarious, Lane, that after she's acquitted and everybody's like, oh, I can't believe this happened to you. You poor thing. You were set up. And then she just goes and murders a bitch.
Right, but it undoes the entire trial scene, which I'm not sure was that well paced to begin with.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? It undoes all of that. Why was that scene there if it undoes it?
Serial Mom reminds me of a cat. How if a cat sees a small creature, its instinct kicks in and has to murder it.
Yeah.
Like a mouse or a bird or something like that. So even though There is media and her family and hundreds of spectators around. She just goes around the corner and just murders somebody because she can't fucking help it.
No,
I mean, I get that part, but I don't know. It just seemed like it undid everything.
I don't think it undid everything. I think I kind of, side with John on this. I think her nature is to be kind of a murderer. That is her nature.
Kind of a murderer.
She's kind of a murderer. I mean, she's
just a little murdery.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's kind of inferred that, like, if that scene didn't happen, like, she's going to slip up and end up in jail anyway. So, like, might as well just be right out of the trial.
And I think the other thing, too, is it kind of just pokes a hole in the whole legal system and how you can be gamed real easily, you know, if you're smart. And that's kind of the thing here, is that trial was a mockery. The whole thing was a mockery. So, yeah, she's going to go back to killing someone. And, you know, she eyed up that juror who wore white shoes from the moment the trial started. And she had to resolve that. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you didn't show it, if you did show it and didn't have anything happen, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like I said, it just wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. And you need to end on a punch, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You need to, you know.
And it just kind of illustrates to everyone who is her supporter that she really is a crazy person.
It's true.
You know, even Suzanne Summers looks at her like, you're crazy.
Shit. Yeah, I just went on like national news and said like that you were this wonderful Betty homemaker and you just killed somebody and you're standing next to me. But, I could see how this movie isn't for everybody.
Agreed. No.
You know, this is a very South Park level satire that, like, it's just unforgiving and everyone is a goofy caricature and awful and or dumb. And, you know, if you're looking for subtle satire, this isn't for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
This is intense, like, hit you in the dick level of satire.
Hit you in the dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the lady dick, or if you prefer no dick.
Yeah.
Or no lady dick.
Yeah, lick. I would the lick. yeah, this movie I can see where people would have issue with it at the time. I don't think it would be too much of an issue now. I think that some of the cynical nature that's in this film wouldn't land as well as it did back then as it does now. You know, and I just really believe that I think this would have a little bit more success because it wouldn't be so much of a parody as it would be kind of like almost this is what you're all dealing with now.
Well, yeah. And I would say that's probably what drove like a lot of people away. Not even the crass, like gross out humor, but this movie is so cynical and so mean. And that's been half of the goddamn really that awfuls that we've done. Are movies like Death to Smoochie where we think they lost the audience because they're so cynical and mean-spirited. Or Cable Guy. Like, if you're not into that type of humor, then you're just not into that type of humor. And, like, this movie is very mean-spirited.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's hilarious, but that could turn off quite a bit of people. And, Brian, it's funny you mentioned that, like, oh, you know, this film wouldn't be so outrageous today. But I think at the same time, I don't think this film would work today because movies like Serial Mom and John Waters and as other movies set the door open for like more over the top sex humor and gross out humor, and that this movie would almost seem like
tame.
Tame by today's
more like a retread.
So yeah, we needed John Waters the movie to make this movie in 1994 in order for us to have the kind of like things that we have now.
I agree with you, John. Yeah. Definitely.
I get that. It's just a shame when you see a movie like this that becomes almost, it's not as successful as you'd hope it would be. You know what I mean? Like that's totally. Kind of the shame of it is this, that it's actually a really good movie. And if you are a fan of cynical cinema, I think that's what we'd call it. Cynical cinema.
Yeah.
This movie is definitely for you. It is funny. It is, as you said, John, it is mean. It is mean to the audience. It does assault the audience. But it also does know when to pull back. And that's a thing that not every movie that is kind of assaulting the audience can do. when do you pull back? When do you give the audience a little bit of room to breathe? And then you kind of hit them again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because, like, you know, the scene with the meat, it's so outrageous. Like, you can't help but laugh your ass off. If she grabs that butcher knife at first, if she just stabs that woman to death, you might be like, oh, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
This little intense. Right. But then she kills her with meat. And even though she's murdering somebody, you laugh your ass off.
Oh my God.
Or my thing, too, is, like, even when you've got the scene where she runs over the teacher, okay, if you didn't have that pothead who saw it go on the news immediately after and say, yeah, I saw it. It was a car. It was a blue car. If you didn't have that moment of just, like, levity of and it's honestly, it's making fun of witnesses of these crimes who are suddenly thrust on you know, national television. If you didn't have that, it wouldn't, it doesn't give the audience any time to breathe.
Yeah.
So.
Or, you know, a wiggling liver on a fireplace poker. That might be my favorite moment of the whole movie.
Where she tries to get it off.
It just cracks me up. It's just like wiggling and then, there.
And then Mrs. Puff is like, you've got blood and gore. By the way, that's Mrs. Puff from SpongeBob.
Oh, no way. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beverly's friend, that voice, it's Mrs. Puff.
That's amazing.
But yeah.
Doesn't clean Birdie? Their murder weapon, honestly.
Yeah, Birdie.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, give Sierra Mom another look if you've never seen it before. If you have seen it, we hope you've enjoyed this little stroll down memory lane in honor of Mother's Day. Any
I
final
miss
thoughts?
My mom so much.
Any final thoughts on Sierra Mom?
I really liked it. I was really glad I saw it, and my sense of humor is really dark and fucked up.
Yeah, I would say if you've never seen this movie, check it out, because it is such a window into 1994, and, you know, take a look at it in terms of, like, you know, if you've never seen Die Hard and you watch it, like, this movie's riddled with cliches, but, like, well, you know, this is where the cliches started. Like, you know, imagine this movie pre OJ Simpson trial.
Yep.
Like, you think, oh, this movie's just kind of like taken off on the OJ trial. No, this came out before that, or, mm-hmm. you know, was shot before that anyways. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it's such a window into 90s cynicism that if you watch it for nothing else, just kind of watch it for the historic landmark that it was of the 90s world. And yeah, if you want a window into John Waters, but you don't want to be completely grossed out, this is a good place to start. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, here, try, if you never drank beer before, have a Pilsner, and we'll work our way up to stouts. Like, start with Cereal Mom, and then kind of maybe end at Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, you end with Pink Flamingos. That doesn't, I mean, that's, that one, I, man, don't eat while watching Pink Flamingos. Let's just put it that way. It's not a popcorn movie.
Yeah, maybe not.
It's a drink water movie.
Don't have gelatin and rose
no,
beef while
no,
that.
No, 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 no.
Ew.
But anyway, John, where can they find you at on the Twitter machine?
At Chicks with Dicks. No, I'm sorry. The Unreal J Wolves.
Lane?
LA_Croft.
So you can find me at Brian Kindtown. I also run the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or quest you want to throw away, you want to talk to us about your mother, who might have serial killer tendencies, you can contact us.
Please do.
At cinemapsychoshow.com. And make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and we will see you next time.
Is this the cocksucker residence?